Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Tim Nightingale. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John.
So, Tim is the editor-in-chief of the Pathfinder fanzine Wayfinder, as well as one of the co-founders of PaizoCon. In addition, Tim is an accomplished freelance author in his own right, with both Pathfinder First Edition and Second Edition credits. So, Tim, can you tell us a little bit about how you ended up as editor-in-chief of Wayfinder?
Yeah, that's it is an interesting story. It is really tied to PaizoCon.
Mm-hmm.
We did our first year of PaizoCon, and it was a success, so Paizo, we can get through, you, I think one of your questions is that. But anyways, one of the people who wanted to attend, one of the fans, was named Hugo Solis. He is in Mexico, and he contacted me and said, hey, I want to do a program for the con.
Okay.
Right. And I was like, and that was a time where we hadn't announced that Paizo was actually going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought I was in charge.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. So I was like, yeah, that's nice. That's a good idea. I'll get back to you. So I was kind of waiting for the release to drop that Paizo mm-hmm. was going to be running it. And so when it did, I said, we have to change. You know, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we might be able to do kind of like a little magazine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we talked a little bit, and I introduced him to Liz Kortz, who had actually experienced doing a fanzine
mm-hmm.
Of sorts. So we kind of put those two together. I remember we had a chat that we talked back and forth about how this was going to work. It was, I don't know whose idea it was. I don't want to take credit for something I didn't do, but I do remember saying, you know, this is the Pathfinder thing, so mm-hmm. it would be really cool if this was like a Pathfinder Society kind of missive, mm-hmm. like a newsletter of sorts,
mm-hmm.
where people are emailing in or they're mailing in their accounts, their reports
mm-hmm.
of different mm-hmm. regions, of different things. They're telling stories that they heard, all of this sort of thing. It could be like a compilation of missives from the field,
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
And we kind of just sort of ran with that a little bit, but it sort of just morphed into what it is now. So,
how big was it when it first started? How many pages did you have?
Man, I have to go over and look. It's probably
was
like,
it pretty little?
I think it was like 70 some pages.
Oh, it was pretty big.
Yeah,
it was from the beginning.
Fairly big from the beginning.
Yeah,
it didn't get out of control until I took over, and then my graphic designer. Dane Nielsen was basically like, you're killing me here, dude. And so I was like, okay, we're no longer doing 125-page things.
Wow.
We're going to go back, and I set the limit at 76 because mm-hmm. it was just like, it's too much.
Yeah, it's a very substantial, in a professionally done magazine feel
yeah.
when you get it now.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, when you did get it. Now mm-hmm. it's a PDF. They don't do print copies, do
no,
they?
No, we don't
yeah.
do print copies.
When did they stop doing the print copies?
About 2 years ago.
Okay.
We had just, it's hard to give it away for free.
Right.
But yet print it where the printer actually wants several $1,000s to
right.
print it. So
right. and
we had sponsors.
Right, you're selling ad space and stuff.
Ad space,
right?
and that was on a tricky side because mm-hmm. we're collecting money, and then I had to pay taxes on
right.
it, and people were like, well, you should, you know, be an LLC or, you know,
yeah,
or a nonprofit. Yeah. And it was kind of like, that's beyond what this was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're all, when it gets to that point, it becomes a business,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if I want to get into that. So
mm-hmm.
so we basically had some hard decisions, and we're like, you know, most people download it.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that get a copy are the people who go to PaizoCon.
Right.
And
right.
then anything that's left over, we would ask Paizo to put on their store
mm-hmm.
to sell back issues. And that would help fund additional next year's mm-hmm. print run. So it was kind of this, a lot of bookkeeping, a lot
right.
of messing around, and after a while it just got to be not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then the point of this was to have fun as a community.
Right.
It was
right.
it's a community project. So.
And did it, when was the first issue? What year did that come out? Was it 2009 then?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I think so.
The
yeah.
second year of PaizoCon. So
yes.
basically, after the first PaizoCon decided, hey, we'll go ahead and do this,
mm-hmm.
and then it was available. At
so,
the
yeah,
second
Hugo
one.
Did that. So Hugo and Liz, Liz was the editor-in-chief for
mm-hmm.
issues 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
Then she got hired by Paizo, and could no longer work on it.
Right, right.
So we had, I remember she took me, we went out for lunch at a brewery nearby here. And she was like, I can't work on this anymore. I don't know who else I could trust to do this. And we're also, you know, PaizoCon buddies. So how would you like to take it over? And I was kind of like, well, let me think about it. And apparently by saying I'm going to think about it, it was a yes.
Yeah.
So I kind of took it on. I was way out of my depth. I was like, how do you do this? How do you set it up? And we had the strength of it was we had a lot of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of editors that are actually freelancers
right.
that actually know what an article should look like and know what the formatting should be. Mm-hmm. And so I leaned really heavily on lots of people to, but you know, when you're herding cats, you have to have the cat herder. So, so yeah, her last issue was 4. I took over on number 5 and I just haven't had the sense to walk away from it. So I just, I don't want to really, it's kind of like a thing that, it's mine now.
Yeah. Right? So issue 5, was that the 2013 issue? Or was issue 4 2013? Which one, the first one that you did, was it before or after it won the Annie? That's what I want to know.
It was after.
Okay.
No, so, I mean, I took over. We won an Annie.
Right.
The number 4, I believe, was nominated.
Okay.
It actually got honorable mention.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it got an honorable mention and... and then, yeah, I took over. That was the All Things Varicia issue.
Not familiar with that.
Every single issue has a theme.
Right.
We started to go with that. When I took the helm, I decided that instead of it being kind of a chaotic everything soup, I wanted to have the entire issue tied to one theme that everybody wrote to. And we tried it for one issue. I think... we officially tried it for the issue number 6, which was Land of the Linarm Kings. And the thematic feel of that, plus the fact that we could apply a look to every page, really helped tie it together. And I felt like, wow, this is one of the strongest concepts. It makes the issues way more solid, and people read through it. And then if they want to go back to them, they're like, hey, I want to have some ideas for this particular AP, so I'll just pick up this issue, right? So they don't have to go hunt through all of the Wayfinders.
So have there been pretty good sales of the past issues on the Paizo site still?
Well, no. When we decided that we were no longer going to be printing them, I didn't need the revenue for that anymore. So that was last year. That was last PaizoCon. I actually asked them to remove all of our back issues from the warehouse.
Right.
And they actually turned out they had a lot, so they weren't. So that means they weren't selling quite very well.
And did they give them all to you? So now you're handing them out?
I gave them. We handed them because we didn't print anymore.
Right.
I just put one in every bag.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that.
Right. So everybody got one in every bag, and then I still had a whole bunch left over. And so the last day, I just put them out on the table and said free to take.
Oh.
And they were gone within an hour.
Okay. So they're all gone. All the back issues are gone.
They're all gone.
Okay.
Except for the one sitting on my shelf over there.
I have a couple at home. So
I have duplicate copies of every issue.
Yeah.
So I'm probably one of the only people who has at least 2 to 3 copies of each issue.
And you have copies. And you have all the PDFs too.
Yeah, I have all the PDFs.
Now, are those archived someplace so people can reference them?
They're all available on Paizo website.
Okay.
You can download every single Wayfinder in the store.
But as a freebie, or do you got to pay
for it?
They're
free. They're all free.
Great. Yeah.
The PDFs are always free.
Right. Excellent. Good to know.
Yeah.
So you were just starting to talk a little bit about PaizoCon and starting that. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you started this convention that now is actually quite large?
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun to see how cool it is now. And then we get all these great guests. So I had been friends. I actually had a friend who worked at Paizo. His name was Rob Stewart. And his name is Rob Stewart. He still is here. And so he was advertising. And at the time, this new guy, Jason Bullman, came on board and wanted to run an office campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rob knew that I had not played for years. I had moved to Pennsylvania for a while and had kind of fallen out of gaming altogether. So when I moved, I had just moved back. And Rob said, "Hey, I got a buddy who's not here in the office, but I think you'd be real fun to play mm-hmm. with." So I got invited to join Jason Bowman's Eberron campaign. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got to know them. I got to, you know, you when you play with people every right. 2 weeks for several years, you really get to know all the people. And I also had started, you know, I was sort of a person on the message boards mm-hmm. At the point. At that time, there was a whole movement of the Lords of the Boards. People, it was like it was a very much way smaller and tighter community mm-hmm. than the boards are today. But so we had definite personalities. But there was one guy on there that was he was posting that it was right around the time that Meetup was a thing, mm-hmm. and he wanted to have a meetup mm-hmm. with Paizo fans on the boards, so we could all go and meet somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so he started a thread that said, "Hey, we should do this, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's a great idea," and I kind of follow it, but I watch it descend into everybody wants to have it where they live,
right?
Like nobody wants to like. Pick a central location that's good for everybody. They all want to have it in their hometown. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of developed into like, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. So I had sort of said, well, you could have it out here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And we could actually tack it on to the end of, like we'd have a con inside of a con. Mm-hmm. You could all come to Northwest Con.
Right.
I attend that on a regular basis. And so I was like, we could all go there and we could like have a room party or something. Mm-hmm. And that kind of fell flat, and I was like, "Well, how am I gonna do? What's the tag here?" Mm-hmm. So I went and I had a lunch with Mike McArthur, who has passed on, but he was one of the associate editors at the time, and we were good friends. And I said, "So, let's say I had a little meetup or something. Do you think that the Paizo editorial team and people would show up and like?" Run on some games or talk or anything. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I think that would be fun." Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's go back and ask the editorial pit. Mm-hmm. So we went back and I kind of just sort of fielded it out to everybody. And everyone was like, "Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun." So, I went and told the guy that was trying to set it up. I was like, "So I can," and I think I put it on the board. I'm like, "I think I can get most of Paizo or some of the people from Paizo to come mm-hmm. plus a few other people like Wolfgang Bauer or whatever mm-hmm. and we could have it here if we hold it here in this area we can set it up and then I can invite actual people from the company and the freelancers to come." And everyone was emphatically, "Yes, let's do that." Mm-hmm. We set it up on the meetup. I collected money. I reserved the hotel, which was in the basement of La Quinta, that's over on 520.
Okay,
it's the one there.
So pretty close there.
In Bellevue. Yeah. So I wanted to have it close. Yeah. So it's right next to the Burger Master, so we could mm-hmm. go have some Burger Master. So I set it all up. It was a day. I only had it for a day. Mm-hmm. Only it was a Saturday, and I got 50 some people to sign up and give me $25 a piece.
Wow.
So we were able to reserve the small room, mm-hmm. which had more pillars in it than was humanly necessary.
Right.
I think we exceeded the fire code capacity of that room. We had people from WotC that crashed.
Wow.
That crashed it. They showed up and just paid me $25 straight up.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
We had Paizo. They brought a bunch of swag. Mm-hmm. So we had some tickets and we set up like a lottery sort of thing so people could win prizes. And then Liz Quartz, she helped set up sort of the programming on how, who was going to talk and what who were going to be on the panels and what, and she asked the questions and kind of sort of set up my program for me mm-hmm. while I handled all the, where's the food coming from? It came from, Costco mm-hmm. and did a big, huge Costco run. It's all part of the price. And with beer and everything. Mm-hmm. So, so we held it for a day. Everyone loved it. Everyone talked about how we needed to do a bigger, better con next year. I went ahead and did a pre-reservation for all of the convention space in that La Quinta, plus a couple extra suites. And so we could expand out. And then I had Josh Frost, who worked at Paizo, took me out for lunch and said, so we want to take over and run it. Mm-hmm. We had so much fun.
Right.
We just wanna, and I should say that we had invited the editorial people. So I had like Jason Bullman was going to run something. Mm-hmm. And I had James Jacobs, Mike McArthur came. I had Wolfgang Bauer, who was going to run a game. They brought a bunch of, you know, board games that like the Kill Dr. Lucky had come there. And so we had all these people. But unbeknownst to me, Lisa found out about it, Lisa Stevens. And she said, everyone in the company is going to this.
Oh.
So basically everyone in the company who was in Paizo at the time showed up.
Wow.
And it like stunned everybody. No one had any idea that they were going to get like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody came. And it was fantastic. It was a real...
And did they have games, too? I mean, other than the board game? I mean,
So the lottery...
Okay.
The original lottery was a ticket with your name on it in a hat.
Okay.
And I went over and I said, here are the people that are going to be in Jason Bowman's game. And I drew five names, and and those people sat down at that table.
Nice.
These are the people that are going to play with Wolfgang.
Yeah.
And I dished that out. Here are the people they're going to play in this game.
So much simpler than now.
Yeah. And the thing was that everybody played.
Yeah.
Everybody got a space in there. Everybody got a seat at the table. And that was the way it was for at least the first three or four PaizoCons, is that if you were in the lottery, you were almost guaranteed to have a spot at a table with someone from Paizo running a game. Guaranteed. But then as it grew, that became a more and more rare event, because now there are more people vying for the same seats at the table, and they can't run them 24/7 anymore. So so that's now the lottery is much more complicated, and it has to be, because you are literally dealing with 10, 20 times the amount of people.
So when you started at La Quinta, how long did it stay there, and did it move somewhere else?
Just the one year. Just that one year.
Oh, then it went right to the Doubletree?
No. It's moved around quite a bit.
Okay.
For a while it was at the Coast Hotel, which is now, I don't know what it is, over by the hospital in Bellevue, on 16th. It was there for 2 or 3 years, and that was a really great space for us for a while. And then, of course, we outgrew that.
Right.
then we went to the one down here at Redmond Town Center, which was phenomenal. But they were also dumb, because they the hotel was under construction.
Right.
So they actually put us out in outside tents, which sounds bad.
Well, it's
amazing. But in summer, it was awesome, because you were actually gaming outside in like this tent in the parking lot or whatever. And it was awesome. I remember at night we all sat out there and like with a whole bunch of like whiskeys and stuff, and played Cards Against Humanity outside, and we were as loud as we needed to be. It was great. But and you were in the town center, so there was never any question on where you're going to go eat or what you could do.
Right.
So I really enjoyed that.
A lot closer to their headquarters,
it was,
too.
But it was also that hotel just was terrible for space and. So then they moved to down to SeaTac to the Marriott for a year or two. I hated that. That was because there's nothing near that. And then they came when the for me, PaizoCon had become huge when it started to when it went to the Doubletree,
right?
Because that's where I saw NorwestCon,
right?
You know, NorwestCon's been there for years. Right. It's like 3,000-4,000 people that attend that, and when we took over that entire space, and I've seen other conventions at, I was like, okay, now this is a major convention, because we're taking over a huge space.
It's quite large, and the thing with that space is that it's so much further away from Redmond too. And you got to pay so much for parking there.
I know. I mean, there are
workarounds and stuff.
There are different issues with it, but it's a great space to have, and it's big, and that is a big enough space that PaizoCon can continue to grow into it.
Right. Well, that's really cool hearing all that history there. So.
It is. And I only brushed on half of it. There's tons of stories about that.
So. Yeah, I've only been to the last two. So, okay. Yeah, so I just started really playing with Starfinder, and so, you know, only the last couple of years. So I noticed that kind of as your day job, you're an environmental scientist, and you kind of specialize in aquatics.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have numerous credits for monsters that are aquatic in nature. So can you tell us a little bit about the synergy between kind of what you do for a living and your writing?
Well, so I deal with aquatic entomology, so I do river bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people at Paizo, they basically figured out I'm the critter dude. So I've been able to do a lot of critters that drawing from that.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely the inspiration. So
do you like base them on like a critter you're already studying and say, I'm going to expand this to a monstrous scale or something like that? Or
aquatic insects that are in bestiary 6. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happened. And what in the interesting thing about that was that one of the creatures it's called a Bella stomatid. It's a big toe biter beetle. It's that was actually done by James Jacobs back when he was doing 3.5 stuff.
Hmm.
So there was an original. James and I have talked about this as one of his favorite bugs. It's called a toe biter, right? So, so he had developed that, but I knew everything about it since I am an aquatic entomologist.
Right.
I know all of the different life history stages. Mm-hmm. I know that it injects a toxin in, that it dissolves its prey from the inside. So I took all of these, the accurate biological stuff, and I was like, I'm going to take your creature, the template, the stat block and everything, and I'm going to rework it, but I'm going to put in all this nasty stuff that actually really happens.
Right. Wow.
And so I developed that, and then there was a couple other ones. I was like, well, what other horrifying creature, you know, bugs have I done? And one of them is called a helgramite. You find them mostly in the south.
Mm.
They're gigantic Dobson fly larvae. They have huge mandibles. It's like so when they grab onto you, ouch.
But, so the ones in real life are like a foot long or not?
No, they're probably about six inches. I mean, so some really of the big guys.
And that's a larva, though.
Yeah, it's the larva.
Wow.
They turn into a Dobson fly, which is this weird, crazy fly that has immense horns that mean nothing. And so a lot of those, I was, you know, that the Cordulogaster was one that I did for, I think it's Tide of the Torrent AP, that AP chapter. That one was interesting because it was sort of something in my head that if they ever ask for something weird again, like a demon or a daemon creature, this is what I'm going to do. So I had this one in my back pocket, and they asked me, can you do kind of this sort of thing? It's going to make aquatic. It's like a demon or a devil or, you know, something like that. And so I basically created this. It's based on a dragonfly larvae that looks horrifying. It just has, it's got kind of an alien jaw that pops out, and it's got all these sharp spikes on it. It looks horrifying. I actually have a picture that I took under a microscope of one of the specimens, and I just love the concept of this. So I actually made them like live in the river Styx.
Wow.
So they're actually these creatures that live in there, and incorporated the whole memory stealing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you fall in the river Styx, you have memory loss. Well, they actually have lived in the river Styx for so long that they actually can, when they bite you, they can absorb your memory.
Wow.
Right. So you can actually become, and it does a confusion thing and a feeble mind if it's really bad. And I kind of traded them up. So they're, you know, they're daemons, basically. They become daemons.
Yeah. Well, that sounds pretty nasty.
So, anyway. But it was all based on an aquatic insect. Yeah. So it was all on a dragonfly larvae that looks just terrifyingly. And I even kept the name. That's the genus name is Cordulogaster.
And how did the artwork compare?
So I don't have the kind of control over artwork I do on Wayfinder, but I sent a ton of pictures. And it turned out the artwork turned out fantastic.
Yeah.
I was very happy. I was like, yep, that is horrifyingly close enough, right? So, yeah. But yeah, I do get to play with that. But my first one was the Vrykolakis, which is based on the Greek vampire. Mm. Wes Snyder had come to me. I was gaming in the office and stuff, and I knew Wes a little bit, but he wasn't in our gaming group, mm-hmm. so I only kind of knew him, you know, because I bump into him.
Right.
And we were talking, and he's like, "So Tim, how is it that you are in the office like this and all the time, and you don't write for us?" And I was like, I kind of looked at him. I'm like, "I'm not a game writer. That's not my. I wouldn't even know what to do." And he's like, kind of did his hand wave, like, you know, dismissed me, like that's not an excuse. So he's like, "What if I give you an assignment and you just try it out?" Mm-hmm. And so what he had in mind is he said, there's a vampire, it's like a Greek vampire that's a cross between a vampire and a werewolf. So it's that's a Vrykolakis, mm-hmm. which is slightly Vrykolakis or something like that. It's they're so similar in name, right? But I went to the UW library and I started like checking out Greek mythology, mm-hmm. Greek folklore books. Mm-hmm. And I actually had just like tons of accounts. Since I'm a researcher, right. I'm a scientist, I immediately go and like, I'm going to research this, like get accounts from old Greek folk women, you know, mm-hmm. tales and stuff. And what I turned out was the Greek vampire is a completely different kind of thing. It's creepier. There's some crossover between the Slavic, mm-hmm. back and forth. So it took on some aspects, but it was doing some other things. And so what I came back with had nothing to do with werewolves at all.
Oh.
But what I loved about this one is that one of the bits of the folklore is that when you kill it, its spirit goes and possesses an animal, like a dog or a cat or mm-hmm. whatever. And in my head, I'm thinking to myself, the party has defeated this thing. Instead of it turning into a mist like a vampire does, its spirit retreats into a squirrel, which runs through the forest and they lose it. So I have an entire, high-level party trying to hunt down a squirrel in the middle of the forest to kill the squirrel before it gets back to its grave and becomes another Vrykolakis.
Wow.
Vrykolakis. So, to me, I just giggled with glee about the visualization of them. Uh-huh. And then somebody pointed out, "Oh, what if it's somebody's familiar?"
Yeah.
And then it was like, "Oh, that's even better." So that was a lot of fun to do that. That is the first one.
So how did Wes like your twist on it like that?
He was a little, you know, like, okay, that's different than what I asked you for, but let's go with it.
Okay.
You know? So
okay.
Yeah. So it turned out really well. It actually was in Mother of Flies, mm-hmm. And then it got bumped up. It's in the Bestiary 6.
Cool.
It actually got promoted. I've been waiting for years for them to decide that it was worthy enough to be put into a book.
So did you
book.
Have to rewrite that, or did they just bring it straight in?
I think they just brought it straight in. Yeah. I think it had to do a little development, because I think that might... I don't know if that was before Pathfinder or not, or if that was still 3.5. So they may have to do a little tweaking. Mm-hmm. I think they had to do a little tweaking with it. But yeah, for Bestiary 6, I got to do that, plus a whole bunch of other critters. I became the vermin guy, so I got to do this.
Bugs and vermin.
Sulfugid, a lot of the sea anemones and jellyfish entries and stuff like that.
And you've been doing some stuff for second edition now.
So I did a couple monsters. I think I made like three or four in Bestiary 1. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, James Jacobs contacted me and said, "So I hear you're the expert at converting monsters." So I got to do one of the APs. I think it's number 5 of the Age of Ashes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
So I did all of them. They asked me that far in advance. Then I was like, yeah, I'll just take them all and do them. So the best one I like of that one is, I'm going to totally black out on its name. It's one of the major demons that it's a Zotani spawn. So it's based on Zotani. There was a concept they said, we want something that had come out of, you know, Zotani's corpse or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so here again is where my bug knowledge comes in. I chose some carpet beetles. So they're like Desmond beetles. The carcass, right. they eat on carcass and tissues. Mm-hmm. And their larvae form have these broad, bristly, spiky things, right? Mm-hmm. So I basically just got a blow up shot of one of those. And and I said, yeah, these little beetles ate on Zotani's corpse and became monstrously huge, and they roamed the countryside. Mm-hmm. And so, and I was actually a little worried that it was going to be a little too far outside of the box. It wasn't going to be horrifying or cool enough, but I just got my contributor copies and saw the artwork, and I was like, dead on. This is great.
Nice.
So it actually is really close to what I sent them, and it looks horrifying enough. But yeah, it's a dermid beetle, I think, is what. They're basically this. They eat the skin and stuff, so they're kind of based on the beetles that they shove in when they want to. They have like a body, then they would put all the beetles in there to eat the flesh off and clean the bones. Mm-hmm. So they're based on that.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, if one ate a demon's corpse and
it could do anything.
And infused with demon kind stuff and just becomes horrible in its own right. So I tend to find that nature has enough horrifyingly.
Yes.
If you just blow them up in size and give them a bunch of crazy powers, that's a good enough template for any monster.
Yeah, really. No, that's I like that idea, you know. Let's go find something scary in the backyard and write it up as a monster.
Exactly.
Cool. So, you know, we talked about this earlier. You know, many people have mentioned the Wayfinder is a great way to get started as a freelancer. So what's your advice for people that are interested in writing for Wayfinder and or writing for Paizo? So you have just an annual call, you know. So
it used to be two times a year, but we got to the point where that was like we were doing one issue, and before we could even finish that issue, we were starting the ball rolling on the next one. So it was a year-long cycle that we just didn't get a break from.
Right.
And I had a lot of people burn out, and like, I just can't do that kind of a schedule anymore. So we decided once a year is probably fine. And a lot of times people were submitting specifically knowing that I want to submit to the one that's coming out at PaizoCon, and the winter one's not as important to me.
Right,
we were starting to see an unbalancing of who was submitting to what, so we just thought, one issue.
Right. So it's an annual now. So what advice do you have for people that are looking to submit there to get started?
So number one, keep track of when we're doing an open call. The one thing that we're struggling with is that we really want to put up a website. I think we even have like a shell of one right now. I don't have time to like develop that and put the content in and all that. So we basically rely upon the message board and then the Facebook account and word of mouth, really. So a lot of times what I get is people just miss that we put out an open call. And we put out an open call, it usually starts, I'll announce the theme before PaizoCon or at PaizoCon. And then we'll open it up within a month of that.
Right.
So by the end of June, I've opened it up, and I run it till the end of October. So, you know, I'm giving people, I try to give them at least 4 or 5 months to respond to it. I'd love to give them the full year, but then it just dilutes and people lose track anyway. I find that people usually don't step up on it until the last month anyway. So,
or in my case, it was the last day.
But the thing is that the first hurdle is to figure out, to just pay attention that it's coming.
Right.
So
right.
For people listening, know that we release them every PaizoCon. So we start that right after PaizoCon. So you need to look on the message boards or on, you know, follow Wayfinder on Facebook, and we'll post that we've put up our call. So what I do is I post the call on the message boards. We usually have a thread in the community use policy thread, and I'll just list it. All the rules are there. The theme, what the rules are, the guidelines, how you submit, all the information is put in one post, and then people add on to that. You can ask questions live from on that. At the time we put it out, I monitor it closely, so I try to answer questions right away. As we get further out, I only check in for like to give people updates on how much we've got and what are the areas.
Yeah, how many submissions have you been getting? Like, especially like the last two, they've both been Starfinder.
The Starfinder one was the first. So the last issue, which was 19,
right.
That was our first Starfinder. That one was a struggle because a lot of people just didn't feel comfortable with doing it. I think we got 40 or 50 of them.
Mm-hmm.
This year we got, I think we're close to 90.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So at the height of our thing, which was the Cheliax issue, we got 150 submissions.
Wow.
So yeah, devils are sexy. So, mm-hmm. So that was the most we've ever had. That was also one of the biggest issues we've ever produced because I didn't want to turn a lot of people away. So,
right.
So the first thing is be aware that it's happening, mm-hmm. so you don't miss on it. Follow the guidelines. Download the free issues and kind of get a sense of how it lays out. We're pretty standard with the different types of articles, mm-hmm. so you can look at that and get a sense of what's been done in the past, because we do tend to follow that structure of what it looks like. We have Wheeler Woes. Mm-hmm. There are rules to that I keep reiterating over and over again about what exactly I expect, mm-hmm. And what is a good winning submission, what mm-hmm. will get, what will be better than if you do, what not to do on those.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always ask on, I mean, literally people ask on the message board, like, what if I do this? And it's like, mm-hmm. and then I will copy and paste what I've said before into the thing saying, this is what I expect. But in general, it's just be aware of it, follow the rules, and make sure that you get it in on time. What I was telling people, and it was when RPG Superstar was going on,
right.
is that you have a better chance to be published in Wayfinder than you do being selected for Superstar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because if I get 70 submissions, I pick 45 of those.
Mm-hmm.
So
pretty high percentage.
You have a pretty high percentage, mm-hmm. unless you have really bad grammar.
Right.
Or say something, you cross a line that's not PG-13, or do something to children, or, you know, if you cross some of those taboos that are in the guidelines, usually we'll get rejected.
Mm-hmm.
We're really sticklers on word count.
Right. Right.
So our philosophy has grown over the years. I mean, literally when Wayfinder started out, it was just a bunch of fans that wanted to do a fanzine, and it was fun, right? But there was a point that I realized that Wayfinder was way more powerful than what any of us had taken for granted. I mean, we just had no idea how much of an impact it was having on people. I had somebody who had contributed, and I was when it was we were doing the hard copies, I would hand out before the con, I would hand out copies to our contributors.
Right.
I would hold a dinner, mm-hmm. like a meet and greet. And I would hand them out copies so they could see it before everybody else could. And I remember handing this to a person, and they looked at it, and they went to their article, and they were just blown away. I mean, I could see the emotion, and they were just mm-hmm. like, this is my first article I've ever mm-hmm. had published. This is the first thing I've ever had published. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, it's a magazine, great, everything. Mm-hmm. And then I actually had to pause because I was like, oh, wow, this actually means stuff to people. This isn't just fun. This is serious stuff for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to figure out that some of those people, as they were getting selected for Wayfinder, were actually getting freelance gigs.
Right.
Because now they had something in a portfolio they could show off.
Hey, look, I can do this.
Yeah. And Wayfinder was starting to be held with such a high esteem of how great it looked and how it mm-hmm. looked sometimes more professional than other publishers. People started taking it a little more seriously. And because of that, I had to start thinking, what is Wayfinder's role in mm-hmm. this? Are we just a fun project, or are we now sort of like a gateway?
Mm-hmm.
And I determined that we were a gateway, and that we should start acting like it. That should be our goal, Our goal should be trying to pull in as many people, show them how it's done, give them some mentorship with some of the editors who are freelancers who want to do that. And it should be a learning experience, a growing experience, and sort of a launch board for people. Right. And listening to your interviews on this podcast, I would say I'm pretty successful. We're pretty successful at doing that.
There's a lot of folks that have mentioned, oh, yeah, I started in Wayfinder. Oh, you should start in Wayfinder. And so-and-so started in Wayfinder. Yes, for sure.
So what we do is we teach the basics. Mm-hmm. We do have hard word counts. They're probably different than what Paizo does, but it's still the same thing. We have deadlines, we have turnovers, we have lots of proofreading. Our editors do some on the side development. Mm-hmm. I always ask them, like, if it's super broken, please tell me, because I'm looking at it and I get a feeling that stuff can be fixed. And then I have folks like you who actually know the rules really well and are able to take a stare at it and say, "Nah, that's not right."
I've been really impressed with the submissions last 2 years. So
yeah, it's Starfinder is different because it's like a newer rule set, so people are trying to chomp on to exactly how that works and what's good and what's not, and there's not a lot of guidance for freelancers on how to do that. So, and then there weren't a lot of editors that felt confident in it either.
Right.
And then I even had the problem with, I had a lot of artists in my artist pool that didn't feel comfortable doing sci-fi because we had focused on fantasy for so long.
Right.
So it was sort of hard to get over that hump of we're not doing a fantasy when we're doing a sci-fi issue this time.
So what's going to happen this year coming up? Now we have second edition out. Are we going to switch back?
Why we did Starfinder, because as soon as they announced that Pathfinder 2 was coming, I was like, well, we can't do that anymore.
So, about Pathfinder second edition now, how's that affecting Wayfinder?
Now that Pathfinder 2 has more content, one of the tricks that we learned early on is that you let Paizo build up a head of steam before you head in and grab new content, because what's going to happen is if we jump in too early, people start developing stuff and Paizo hasn't thought of it yet. They make things. The fans make certain ideas, certain classes, they do things. And then Paizo goes, hey, that's a great idea. And then they develop it. And what happens is that the fan's entry becomes invalid because it's over. It's now.
Right.
Now Paizo's done some, has trumped it. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's I like to give a lot of content out there so that Paizo's had their way with things.
Mm-hmm.
They put it out. They've moved on to other things. So now we can step back and say, okay, fans, Paizo's done with this. Now you get to play with it. You get to fill in the gaps that Paizo missed for you, and we now have content that isn't going to go back and get overwritten. With the fact that it's been out and it'll have brought at least what, 2 or 3 APs by the time of next year.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a lot to play with. So we'll probably deal with the whole Age of Ashes kind of. Well, that's probably the one we're going to pick just because it'll have been put to rest a little bit. And we'll just go with that. I mean, I'm ready to go back to it. But what I wanted to do is I wanted the whole thing to be done. People wanted me to jump on right away. I mean, even I remember last PaizoCon, Owen Casey Stevens was like, why are you doing another Starfinder one? You should jump right into Pathfinder 2 because Paizo needs Pathfinder 2 freelancers and they need them fast. Mm-hmm. And that's too long to wait. And I'm like no one on my team wanted to touch Pathfinder 2 because we all needed to learn it first, right? It's like, how can we even announce it when the game hasn't even come out yet? You know, that's preempting. That's too presumptive.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, if we would have done that for this issue, it was released at Gen Con.
Right.
And they were people that had 2 months to learn the rules, develop the content, and send it to us. And then we would have had to learn whether it was right or wrong.
Right.
And I would much rather have luxury of time for everybody to learn the system, become fully invested in it, and then when we decide to go with that, everyone's very excited about it.
So probably at least the next two issues you think will be second edition ones?
Yeah, it's either that or I think, you know, honestly, I really enjoyed the Starfinder issues because it's new, right? We've done, up to that point, we've done 18 issues of Pathfinder.
Right.
Not much, I mean, we were struggling at what is the next theme?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what AP needs to be visited? Mm-hmm. Where was that? So region-wise, is that the theme? It became really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of got tired. You get 18 issues, you get worn out. Like, how many more themes do we have left in us? And Starfinder was a real infusion of, like, all new stuff and new places, and they got a whole bunch of different planets. Mm-hmm. And so people were all like, what's the new Starfinder theme going to be for this issue 20? And I'm like, I just started listening. I was listening to a lot of podcasts, yours included. Mm-hmm. And when they got to the diaspora, and I was like, oh, the diaspora, that's exactly where we need to, because it's the space pirates.
Right.
And
space pirates.
Space pirates are in asteroids and all sorts of weirdness.
Yeah.
It's just like this plethora of, you could throw almost anything in there and it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a perfect theme, because really that you don't want to hinder people with a theme that is too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Too narrow, right?
So, yeah, I was like, I wanted to do Castrovel, and I was like, but people just don't know enough of just not grab you enough to know that would work.
Just there's a big jungle there. That's all I remember. Elf gates,
right.
Stuff like that.
I mean, it's just there's stuff that, you know, and the beauty of Wayfinder is that we do operate under the community use policy.
Right.
So
right.
that allows us to play in Paizo Sandbox.
Right, and that's actually one of the really cool things compared to even third-party publishing. You can actually use all the setting, all the proper nouns, and stuff like that in Wayfinder, which you can't do if you're doing freelancing for other organizations.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really good for Paizo, because I get to see how do you operate in our on our IP.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about getting into a Pathfinder 2 issue. Right now, my head is so totally wrapped into Starfinder in terms of what this issue needs to be.
Right.
And the art's going to be really fantastic.
That is cool. I look forward to that,
So, and that's always a fun part for me is I kind of fell into that position. So I'm the editor-in-chief. I'm also the art director. And I have no training or background in art direction whatsoever. Actually, what happened was Hugo was my art director until he got too busy. And then he said, I'm too busy. You're going to need to do it yourself. And so I just kind of I took on the art direction. And I was kind of like, okay, I sort of know what I want out of art. And I know I'm a real big fantasy art fan. So I know what I like when I see it, and I know what I expect to see in stuff like Paizo. So what we really try to do at all times is emulate Paizo as much as possible so that people look at Wayfinder and actually think it's a Paizo product. I can't tell you how many times people think that it's a Paizo product.
Yeah.
And they think I work at Paizo. They do.
Yeah.
So that's our goal. And for me, the art has become one of my favorite things because I literally get to set how the whole magazine looks. And given the certain the reviews that we've gotten, people, that's become a huge thing, is people remark on how extraordinary the art is. And I mean, I have to say it's because of our artists. I mean, the artists are just, this is... equally, it's not just the freelancers anymore. It's also finding the artists who can do that. And the hardest part of that for me is literally artists don't like the term, you get paid in exposure.
Yes.
Right? And I hate it as well. Yeah. I absolutely dismayed. I just, oh, I can't even. Yeah. So I see an artist and I know that I've never seen them before. And I know they have amazing art. And I know that they're not getting a proper audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if you join our little project and illustrate some things, I guarantee you that it gets in front of the right people. Like, they're not going to check your DeviantArt. They're not going to. They're going to check it after they see you in a magazine that they check out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, a lot of people will turn me down saying I need to be paid for my art. And I'm like, I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
And, but if it makes you feel better, none of us are getting paid for Wayfinder at all. Yeah. Nobody gets paid for Wayfinder. No one.
Yeah.
So we all do it for free. We all do it as a volunteer thing because we believe in the project. And really, honestly, the mission has changed to that of total promotion.
Mm-hmm.
I want the Wayfinder needs to be, this is where new talent is. Whether you're an artist, whether you're an editor, whether you're a layout person, whether you're a writer, you're a budding freelancer who likes to do game content. This is a way for you to find out what it's about, how to integrate with other people to build a magazine or a product. And when it comes out, it's a professional looking thing that other people can look at. You can add it to your portfolio. Mm-hmm. It builds, it's supposed to build careers now. I mean, it's supposed to build these things. And that's really the reason that we do it. I mean, that's absolutely become 100%. When I do it, I do it with that in mind of, I want this person to get this break. So,
well, that is awesome, and you know, it's I'm glad to hear that's kind of your goal. Hearing so many people who say that's where you should get started or where they got to start, it seems like you've been pretty successful at that, and hopefully you'll keep chugging along here for a bunch more years.
The interesting, the funniest story about that is that we were at a PaizoCon. At PaizoCon, Paizo usually has a little developer meeting or a freelancer. They do like two or three to try to catch everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit in a room full of other freelancers who are working on Starfinder or Pathfinder stuff. And during the conventions, I have little badges, little tags that you can tape on that say you're a Wayfinder contributor. And I go in and I sit down and everything, and I would say well over half the room was wearing those.
Yeah.
And I was kind of stunned. I was like,
there you go.
All these people are now contributing. And then, and the alarming thing is even some of the staff now has them as well. So it's, that to me is a real good feeling, knowing that it's making that kind of impact. I'm starting to see that more with artists.
But
it makes me feel good knowing that we are growing the field. So.
Mm-hmm. So Tim, thanks so much for participating in our podcast today. And I'm sure we'll see you again at PaizoCon.
Always.
Maybe we'll see you here at a local game. I haven't seen you and your family around lately, but at our game places. But maybe we'll catch you.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, man.